ओम गणा सिमरंदशा गरंजना शलकया चक्षुर उन्मिलिताम येन तस्माय श्री गुरुवे नमः. So as I mentioned previously, we're going to have like an open question and answers session, but before, you need to translate?
I think the lots of devotees need translation, so okay. I propose that again, we concentrate there, and I suggest that all of those who know English move actually to the front.
Yeah, whatever you think. So I'd like to start out just by a little philosophy or a little practical understanding. You ready? That oftentimes when I'm traveling, people ask me, how is Krishna consciousness or how is ISKCON doing around the world? That's a standard question. And so sometimes I talk about how India, there's so many new temples being opened, and so much going on, or here and there. And then people think of their own countries, you know, hey, what's happening here? And so because generally we have this external measure of success. You understand in Krishna consciousness? There's an external measure, you know, how many temples, how many devotees. But I'd like to present a little bit different perspective. You know, because people may be thinking here, oh, we've been here in Sarajevo for so many years, and we just have this little building, you know, where's the big temple, where's this, where's that? And we may get a little discouraged, despondent, depressed. However, the real measure of success of the Krishna consciousness movement is the internal development of Krishna consciousness, the internal life that the devotees develop. Because if we're simply living externally, you know, just thinking, you know, money or number of books or temples or whatever, then it's not a very enlivening frame of consciousness. So all of us, as we're executing our devotional service, should be cultivating our internal life. That is, ultimately, we all have a spiritual identity, which, of course, is a little premature to try to understand or recognize that spiritual identity now. Like if I told you all what you were in the spiritual world, you wouldn't know what to do about it. Like if I told Trivikram that in the spiritual world you're a cow, he wouldn't have any idea what that meant, or, you know, he'd probably try to walk around, imitate a cow, or something like that. So then we're not ready for that right now. But we can develop an internal spiritual relationship with Krishna, Radha, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, our spiritual master, the great Vaishnavas, the incarnations, avatars of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That can certainly be developed. And that is developed by the chanting and hearing about Krishna consciousness, about Krishna's pastimes, Lord Rama's pastimes, the incarnation's pastimes. And then whatever situation we're in, whether things apparently externally are doing well or they're not doing well, we're always going to be stable. Because in this material world, things are ultimately unstable. Things are ultimately unreal. Unreal in the sense that we're not perceiving them as they actually are. I'll give you an example that we were talking about from modern day physics. Anyone here know anything about subatomic particles or atoms or... No, guess not. Too bad. Anyway, so if you study physics, you know, subatomic particles and all that other nice stuff, you'll find out that most of the world, or everything basically, is space, and there's very few solid... The solid matter that exists is, practically speaking, infinitesimal. I mean, that's so small that you can't even describe it. So when we're looking at this solid matter like this table or like the altar or something like that, it's mostly just space and just atoms moving around, and even inside the atoms is mostly space. So really the whole world is just like in continual flux, continual motion. And Krishna says in the Gita, what nasato vijite bhavo na bhavo vijite sataha ubiyorapi drishto antas tvaniyostat vidarshati. Those who are actually sages consider the temporary things to be unreal, and the permanent things, or the things that continue to exist, are real or substantial. So what continues to exist is our relationship with Krishna. All these external things, nobody will even remember your name in 100 years from now. So we should judge the advancement of the Krishna consciousness movement based upon how the devotees are developing their internal relationship in life, rather than by external standards. And that way we won't get depressed. And so here, I'm seeing the devotees are becoming more and more Krishna conscious, so there's great success. Okay, so that's how I'll start the whole discussion. Anyone have any questions? Challenging questions? That's what you're here for tonight. We're going to keep it short because we have to leave early tomorrow morning. So? No questions? Yes. Marianne.
Yeah. How we can measure our advance in the spiritual world?
Well, the standard answer you give, that I give, is, and Prabhupada also gave, is how detached you're getting from this world. However, that's sort of like a negative way to measure. I mean, how can you measure how much you're detached? I mean, what do you do? Start sticking pins in yourself and see how much pain you feel? Or you just present sense objects in front of someone? You know, here's the most beautiful lady in the world, you know, an apsara. And you see if the person, you know, faints in ecstasy. Like, I've often asked the question in that regard, like, how do you determine if a guru is actually on the spiritual platform? And that the answer I usually give is you stick pins in him. And you see if he experiences pain, he's not a bona fide guru. That's joking, of course. So detachment is a natural byproduct of attachment. It doesn't exist in a vacuum. So really, my understanding of our measure of spiritual advancement is how much we are attached. And not just attached that we like it, but attached in a deep emotional way to everything pertaining or related with Krishna. Of course, in the study of bhavas means emotions, you have something called a vibhava. Vibhava means that which excites you. Like, there's two types of vibhavas. I don't want to get too technical. Alambana and udipana. That means things that are connected to Krishna and things that are directly Krishna. I'll give an example. Connected to Krishna means if you see a flute, you start to get excited, or a peacock feather. And directly Krishna is if you see Krishna. So depending upon your reaction, emotional response to those vibhavas, you're either less or more advanced. You can judge your advancement based on that response, which is really interesting. Like if I say Gauranga, and you don't feel anything in your heart, was that Gauranga Bali Dehavi Pulaka Sharir Hari Hari Naine Bhavi Niya? Isn't it? You know that song? Gauranga Gauranga Bali Dehavi Pulaka Sharir. Like, when will that day come when by chanting the name Gauranga will I feel the hairs of my body standing up and quivering? But do you feel anything? Trivikram, do you feel anything when I say Gauranga? What do you feel? There's some response. I mean, we can go around the room and say, what do you feel when I say Gauranga? Not screaming it. I mean, I know sometimes I was with Jaipa Takamaraj when he was healthy, he would scream the name Gauranga. And it was a little too much for me. I mean, he was in ecstasy, but me, my eardrums hurt. So, but just the name Gauranga.
Nityananda.
So, do you feel any emotion? Some of you do, some of you don't. I mean, let's be honest. Or, you know, what to speak of Krishna, or Radhe, Radhe, Radhe. There was one time I was in Serbia, staying in someone's house, and the ladies were chanting Radhe, Radhe all night long. I was thinking, why? I want to sleep, you know, all night long. They were chanting loudly. Anyway, it was Parameshwari and someone else, you know, Parameshwari. Radhe, 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 Radhe. So, I mean, that's nice. I'm not denying that. I'm not saying that we should go around just chanting Radhe, Radhe all day long. That's another issue. But depending, or you see, just like today I was in Draupadi's house and I saw some pictures of Radharani or Vrinda Devi I saw, right? And I became so happy when I saw it. Has anyone ever seen her Vrinda Devi, Didi? It's pretty amazing. You saw it, and I had to arrange for some pictures to be taken of the deity so I could put it in my computer and I could look. So it made me very happy when I saw Vrinda Devi. And when I hear that, like another thing, like Mariyanti said to me, she said, whenever I see you, I'm reminded of Govardhana. I felt ecstatic. That's praising. It's not that I'm Govardhana. Actually, there's one of Krishna's coward boys called Govardhana Nala. But I'm not him. So, but it just made me happy when I heard that, you know. Or I remind someone of Govardhana. Wow. I must be making spiritual advancement. So the certain things excite us. Or, let's say if I hear that someone's making spiritual advancement, that excites me too. And then, anyway, so other things don't excite you. Like if you, like today I was watching some children watch cartoons. You know. Whew, cartoons, I mean. Anyway, I won't mention anything about it. But it was just, it didn't excite me. But the children were excited. Actually, most of the cartoons, they're pretty violent, isn't it? Pretty violent. You know, you have like animals like beating each other. I remember when I was young, there was this one cartoon called Roadrunner. Anyone's ever seen that?
Yes.
Where he goes, beep, 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 yeah. Beep. And I think, what was it, Wile E. Fox or something like that? There was a fox that was always trying to catch the Roadrunner. And the fox kept running into the mountains and smashing himself. You know, so much violence. What?
Coyote.
Yeah, Wile E. Coyote, that's what his name. Thank you very much. So, it's funny, we remember that better than we remember Krishna, isn't it? So, I mean, these things, yeah, that's all right. These things don't, no, I'm remembering it too, so. These things, you see how little these things excite me. You know, if I hear there's a soccer game, you know, World Cup or something, you know what a World Cup? Yeah, from Split. So if there's a World Cup game, I remember I was in Fiji and they were playing the World Cup. I think it was rugby at that time, either rugby or soccer. I don't even know the difference. That's how little I know. So, because I was never interested in these things. So it was being played in the UK, and Fiji is 12 hours difference from the UK. So it was being played midday in the UK, which is midnight, 1 o'clock. In Fiji. So I was sleeping. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, I hear in the ashram, Jai, Hari Bol, Jai, Nitai Gauranga. And I was thinking, these devotees are very advanced. And then I asked, you know, next morning, you know, wow, what was so ecstatic? Well, we won the World Cup or something like that. And then I went around to all the devotees, even the ladies, I asked them, you know, did you watch that lesson? Yes, yes, yeah. So, But they were experiencing bhavas, you understand? That's called bhava rog. Bhava rog means the disease emotions. It's like a sick man will experience diseased emotions like depression or something like that. So most people in the material world are experiencing bhava rog. So to answer your question, is that we can judge our advancement by how little bhava rog we're experiencing and how much, you know, transcendental bhava. You know, things remind us of Krishna. Like, I look at that picture. Radha Shyam, you know, like that. Shamsundra in Vrindavan. And then I just think, wow. Or you hear Govardhan. So these are symptoms. And it gets so intense, of course, that you really know you're advancing when you get into the Vyabhichari bhavas, which means uncontrollable intermittent ecstasy. And someone says Govardhan and you start rolling on the ground, foaming at the mouth. Is that happening to hear to anybody? No. No one's really advanced yet. So that's how we judge success. That's what we should be aiming for. Goranga balite habi pulakasha. When will that day happen? And also Bhaktivinoda Thakur was that song, Kabi habi bolo se dinamar. When will that day be mine? You know that song? Kabi habi bolo se dinamar. Aparere guche shudaname ruche. You know the song? Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's a beautiful song. So, really, that's how we gauge how much we're advancing. I wouldn't put so much on the detachment aspect, but more on the attachment aspect. Because sometimes you see devotees who appear to be attached, like that Pundarik Vidyaniti. You know the story? He was the spiritual master of Ganadhar Pandit Goswami. And he appeared to be very attached. He was seated on a silk bed, and he was chewing betel nut, and he had jewelry all over his body and silk clothes and everything like that. But as soon as he heard Mukunda Dad recite a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, he immediately started swooning in ecstasy. So I would say, don't put so much stress on the detachment aspect, but put stress on the attachment aspect. And detachment comes naturally. Because if you try to get detached from something, it's like I often say in my seminar, you can't do a don't, right? Don't be attached. Does that work? Don't be attached. Like you say that to children, you know, don't be attached to cartoons. It's Maya. And that makes it more interesting. If someone tells me it's Maya, I say, wow, sounds interesting, you know. Like you have that story of Markandeya Rishi in the Bhagavatam. He wanted to experience Maya. Did you know that? Anyone know that story? You know, Krishna came and said, you know, what do you want to see? What do you want, Markandeya? And he said, well, I'd like to see your illusory energy. Might be interesting. And so then what happened? Does anyone know that story? Bhagavatam? He experienced the cosmic devastation. And he was floating in the waters of devastation with all these big Tim and Gilla fish eating him. They're trying to eat him. And then he came to this island. What was on the island? Does anyone know? There's a tree. I'll give you a hint. There was a leaf on the tree. Big, big tree. Okay. What was on the leaf? Betel nuts? Krishna was lying as a baby on the leaf. And what did Krishna do? It's a Bhagavatam test. Yeah, he was putting his... That's good. That's the first thing he did. He put his toe in his mouth because he wanted to taste the nectar of devotional stuff. Yeah, because the devotees worship his feet, so he wanted to worship his feet too. That's why Krishna became Lord Chaitanya. And then, what did he do after that? He breathed in, and he sucked Markandeya Rishi within his body, right? And then Markandeya Rishi experienced the universe as it was before. So, But Krishna was not happy that Markandeya Rishi asked to see Maya. That's, Prabhupada describes that. He looked at him in such a way that could be understood. Krishna wasn't happy. So anyway, so we should try to develop. This is the real success of our Krishna consciousness movement. One devotee, like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, said if one devotee can become a pure devotee, his mission is completely successful. He compared one devotee to the sun or the moon, and many neophyte devotees to twinkle-leaning stars. You know that? You ever hear that? Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. Up upon the skies of bright, will you light me tonight? I don't know the rest of that song, but you probably know that. So twinkle stars don't give much light, but the moon and the sun, they give a lot of light. Because look at Prabhupada. Like you could say, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mission was very successful because the product of that was Prabhupada. I mean, that's really how you can gauge the success. I mean, there's many other great devotees who came. I'm not criticizing anybody. But really, nothing really happened except, you know, the Mats, they started fighting with each other, went to court. But Prabhupada came out and actually carried out Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda's mission all over the world. I mean, if you can have one disciple like that, you don't need any more. Isn't it? I mean, that'd be pretty good. One disciple like Srila Prabhupada. You can just sit back and relax, you know. The rest of us have to figure out how to have as many disciples as possible in case one makes it. You know, it's like going gambling and shooting craps, you know, something. You know what that is? You have dice. Hope we get snake eyes here. So, I'm just teasing. So that's how our success is measured. If there could be one pure devotee here in Bosnia, this mission is the most successful. Because that one pure devotee can shine and make the whole country Krishna conscious. Prabhupada was so amazing that I'll tell you how we started Krishna consciousness in Fiji. It's really interesting. Prabhupada was passing through the airport on the way to Australia. Fiji was like a stopping point. You're just changing planes. And this one Indian gentleman, his name was Deoji Punja. He heard the Prabhupada was coming, so he came, saw Prabhupada, you know, just to pay respects. And first thing Prabhupada asked him was, is there any Radha Krishna temple here? First thing. And he said, no. And then the second thing Prabhupada said, then start one. Can you imagine? Then start a temple. And by the potency of that instruction from Prabhupada, a temple was started. Not only a temple, we have like 7 or 8 temples there in a country where there's only 900,000 people. Big temples, not just like little tiny temples. It's the potency of one pure devotee saying something like that. So that's really the point. We want to develop quality. Quantity may be there, but quality is much more important. So we should concentrate on that to make it successful. You don't need a big building. You don't need to install giant deities. You don't need to have, you know, anything big. You don't need millions, billions of euros. You need that personal purity. And then you can change the world. Just like I saw, one of my godbrothers had a picture taken with the President of the United States. You saw that picture? Yeah, Radhanath Maharaj. And the President has his arm around. Pretty good. Yeah, so there, and then, yeah, just one devotee can have so much effect. Another interesting story is that when the Hare Krishna movement was young, we were giving prasadam on a daily basis to Jobs, you know, the head of Apple Computer. Steve Jobs, yeah. And he talks about this in his, and devotees have written him a letter saying, you know, at least you should give us some Macintoshes to pass back, but he's not interested. Anyway. So that's the point. So any other questions? Or comments about that? So basically, we don't just try to don't look only externally, you know, criticize people. Why is this person not doing that? The reason I'm not Krishna Ganta, the reason the movement's not expanding is because of that person. And we get into a whole political framework of mind, which won't help us. We ourselves are responsible for our own spiritual advancement. No one can impede our spiritual advancement. There's no material cause for our spiritual advancement. It's simply our own desire. And then we can make this movement successful. We don't have to be dependent on others. So, yeah.
He gave information that one can stay for a long time and be He told us that even Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said that one can stay for two lives at the level of Anarthamidhi.
That's right.
Would you please tell us what can we do to overcome that level, which is obviously very difficult in our life?
Okay. So, where do anarthas come from? Does anyone know? Where?
According to Krishna Chakra, there were four reasons.
What are the four places?
Offenses, sinful activities, pious activities, and devotional service.
Okay. So first of all, you got to stop the anarthas from coming. Yeah. Has anyone here ever been in a boat that had a leak in it? No, never in a boat. I have. And then you get, there's something called bailing it out. You get a can and just keep throwing the water out. It's very frustrating because you haven't plugged the leak. Because you just keep doing it and the water keeps coming in. Yeah. So in the same way, we're doing these four things. We're committing sinful... Well, we may not be committing sinful activities. And we may not be committing pious... I think we need to be a little more pious. That's another issue. But we do commit offenses. That's why we're losing a taste. Offenses against the deities, offenses against devotees. You know, if a devotee makes a mistake, we're so much inclined to criticize the devotee in a very personal way. How many times did you tell a devotee he was a rascal? He makes a mistake. We're human. To err is human, to forgive is what? Does anyone know that saying? It's an English saying. To forgive is what? Divine. To err is human, to forgive is divine. That's actually an important saying for us. You can learn something from non-devotees. I hate to tell you that. You know, people who are not Krishna conscious, there's a lot you can learn. You know, some people I see have an attitude that, what can they tell us? You know, they're not devotees. You know, what can the mechanic tell us about my car? He's not a devotee. I want a devotee mechanic. Even though the devotee mechanic doesn't know the difference between the cylinder and the exhaust pipe of the car. So we criticize Vaishnavas quite often, engage in political affairs. I've seen that happen. I don't want to give specific examples, but I've seen that happen. That, you know, a devotee will make a serious mistake. That happens, and then everybody just wants to pile on him, to kick him out of the movement, to make him suffer. Isn't it? We take delight in seeing someone suffer. I mean, just like you had here during the war, you know, there were people taking delight in seeing other people suffer. And that's called retributive justice, right? Retribution. But we should be more interested in restorative justice, that if someone has done something, help them rectify. You know, if they've hurt someone, okay, so let them contribute to helping the person. And let them understand how they hurt the person. Let them learn some empathy. I mean, these things are more important. And Prabhupada said that we make devotees by spilling gallons of blood. So why should we be so anxious to criticize someone who has actually given their life to Krishna? So that's a major offense that we do commit, most of us commit that offense. You know, in the name of politics, you know, the name of... You know, even in the movement, we have coup d'etats. You know what a coup d'etat is? That's a little French word.
Yeah,
coup d'etat means to overthrow your leader. Or we go on the internet, you know, to the Vaishnava Ninda network. Anyway, it's an interesting expression. So we have to be extremely careful. We should respect Vaishnavas. And of course, if someone is not of the highest character, we just avoid their association. But Srila Rupa Goswami says that if someone chants Hare Krishna even once, we respect them in our mind. Even once, they say Hare Krishna. Oh, very good. Or even they take prasadam. Like Shivananda Sen, he had a dog that was just eating prasadam, and he started serving the dog. Isn't it? You know that story? The dog went back to Godhead eventually. So that's a major offense. But perhaps the most difficult offense to avoid is the source of anarthism. Is the byproducts of bhakti. We mentioned that already. That how, by performing bhakti, you get some spiritual potency. People admire you. You actually feel happy, relieved from all distress, on top of the world, I'm the best devotee. I'll give you an example from my own personal life. I was a brahmachari many years ago, before any of you were born. And I was distributing books. And I was extremely successful. See, I'm bragging even now. But I was successful. You know, hello, sir. How are you doing? Where are you from? We have this book on spiritual knowledge. It's about yoga, reincarnation. You're interested in that? Where are you from? Yeah, I have friends from there. I'm also from there. Yeah, it's very nice to meet you, sir. So here, take this book. You know, anyway, it's a whole rhythm the book distributors get. And so what happened is I thought, I'm really advanced in spiritual. I'm a good book distributor. So there were two, I was a brahmachari, and I went up to two sannyasis at that time. And I said to them, look, I've become so good at book distribution, I can distribute a book to anyone I want. And they looked at me like I had leprosy or something like that. I said, you don't believe me? You watch. And so for the next 3 or 4 hours, nobody would even give me the time of the day. Krishna was very kind, you know, like that. So in other words, that's an example of pride or anartha that comes from performance of bhakti. Because you really feel it. I'm doing the best thing. I'm a member of the best movement. I got the best guru. Even we go through that, you know. I got the best guru. And someone else says, I got the best guru. My guru is on the platform of prema. Your guru is only on an Arthanavritti stage. My guru is from India. You've heard that before. And he was born in India. The best your guru can expect is that he'll be born in India the next life. There's a story that Prabhupada told that the devotees were speaking to one sadhu, and the sadhu said to the devotees, do your devotional service very nicely and you can be born in a nice Brahmin family in India in your next life. And when Prabhupada heard the story, he said, go back and tell that sadhu, You chant nicely and do your sadhu business nicely, in the next life you can take birth in my movement in the West. So there's many sources of pride that we have, and this is, what do they say? Pride goes before the fall. There's another nice saying, isn't it? That, and this causes anarthas. So to answer your question, how to get rid of anarthas? First we have to guard against these four things. You know, pious activities, sinful activities, but offense is more than anything else, and also the weeds that grow at the same time as bhakti, like the weed of false pride, arrogance. You know, I'm a guru. I've been in the movement so long. Like that. Get me that. Like sometimes I say to Dura Prasanta, get me that immediately. Get me that immediately, or else you're going to hell. And he says, yes. I'm afraid of going to hell. So he starts shaking. Right?
That's not our relationship.
No one would believe that about me. But anyway.
I were afraid of you
So, but you, anyway. So fear, I mean, I don't like the idea of fear in a relationship. I just don't like it. So anyway, so we guard against those four things. And then and at the same time, okay, that's how you do that. And then as we're talking about sankalpas, that means having, while we're chanting, pray to Krishna to help us overcome these different anarthas like lust, anger, greed, illusion. And also another way thing, we can try to engage these things in Krishna's service. That's interesting. Like you can engage lust in Krishna's service by having nice Krishna conscious children. Or angry like Arjuna. Right? So there's different ways. You can actually engage anarthas in Krishna's service. I mean, not anarthas, but a tendency, certain tendencies that may later on lead to anarthas. You engage them in Krishna's service, like Arjuna. Prabhupada gives the example. Arjuna, Hanuman. Right? So this is different ways of dealing with this. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy. Yeah, I mean, even spiritually there's envy. Prabhupada encouraged us to compete. I was a temple president, and we were competing with the Radha Damodara party, which is one of the main book distribution parties many years ago. And we defeated them. And Tamal Krishnamurti, practically smoke was coming out of his ears when we defeated him. And Prabhupada said, Tamal does not like to get defeated. And we were very happy. You know, it was like a challenging, like a chivalrous type of thing. We'd be calling him up every day during the Christmas marathon. We've done so many books. And Prabhupada liked that very much. So in spiritual life, you don't do away with even envy. You purify it into something spiritual, like a competitive spirit. Isn't that nice? And anger, you know, angry. You don't even get angry at Ravana or something. You can dovetail it. Yeah, how Ravana was killed. Interesting. Ravana was killed with the Brahmastra. And then, you just become happy hearing about Ravana being killed, don't you? I guess empathy didn't work with him. Some people, empathy doesn't work. And Ravana was definitely a psychopath. It's nothing to do with someone like that. So, any other questions? Yeah.
I have one question regarding offenses to devotees. You said that we should stay away from a person, from a devotee who hasn't got a high character.
But respect in the mind, yeah.
Yeah. What to do in a situation when a devotee is committing a lot of offenses towards other devotees and creating a lot of distress and trying to glorify himself? What kind of inner attitude should we have toward that person Is it our duty to do something because he's really hurting other devotees?
Enlist him in the army, send him to Afghanistan. No, if we can't help, it's better to stay away. And if he's affecting others, it's really tricky. It's a really tricky thing to deal with. Because you do find people who just do that. I mean, that's just, they're doing it because they're in so much pain themselves. They're chanting, we should respect them in our minds. We should avoid their association. But we don't want to politicize it by telling everybody else to avoid their association. It's a very tricky thing. I think approach Vaishnavas who are, let's say, able to deal with the situation. And sometimes someone may have to be kept out of the association of Vaishnavas for his own benefit and the benefit of others. Yeah. And we've had to do that in ISKCON too. Because we don't want to hear offenses against Vaishnavas. Satya Prihitam. Even if something is true, then it has to be spoken beneficially and pleasingly, according to Krishna. We don't. What's the good of saying something critical if it's not going to help someone? It does no good, isn't it? I mean, we can fault find our whole lives, but and the faults can be true. You can say something true, but if you be offensive at the same time. Did you know that? Like I give the typical example outside of Krishna consciousness. Let's say you're walking down the street and you see somebody who's really ugly. And it's the absolute truth that they're ugly. I mean, you don't really need to measure their ugliness, you know. They look like, I mean, they would, in comparison to them, Serpanaka would look like this world. So you don't walk up to them and say, "You are ugly." It's an offense. You know, because it doesn't help them, it doesn't help you. You know, so even just speaking the truth is not enough. We have to speak the truth pleasingly and beneficially. Three things Krishna said. These are listed as the austerities of speech in the Bhagavad Gita, Satya Prihitam. Three things. Anyway, so it has to be done, dealt with very, very carefully, and certainly there are people who are committing millions and millions of offenses, and we may have to separate them from our association. It's a fact. Yeah. Marianne?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, at certain point in our spiritual life, it could happen that we are starting to enjoy
Nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's an impetus that Krishna gives us. And ultimately, we're doing it for, like, even if Krishna, you know, the statement is, if Krishna is happy with my misery is my happiness. Anyway, so that's the highest stage. But we have, like we were talking about last night, that one has to recognize what stage they're at in devotional service. And not feel guilty about it. We have all this guilt feelings, you know. I'm enjoying devotional service. I shouldn't enjoy. Krishna's the enjoyer, not me. I mean, it can drive you crazy. So right now, we're doing devotional service, and it's mixed. I mean, it's mixed. What can I say? Well, most of us. You know, we have mixed motives. We're doing it because we enjoy it, or because because I like eating prasadam, you know, that's what's keeping me going. You know, I'm not ready to go to hell as a deserver. I'm not ready to chant the prayers of Queen Kunti where she says, you know, please let these miseries happen again and again. Tatsa tatsa jagat guru hapunar bhava darshanam. You know that verse? I'll chant it, but I'm not going to mean it when I chant it. Like Prabhupada also said, don't ask for more miseries, there's enough. So, you know, let's be practical. You know, I want, you know, Krishna, you know, make things easy for me, please. Because I'm not really that advanced. You know, I need my hot shower, you know, whatever. You know, we really, anyway, we have to be practical. And sometimes people put themselves in situations where materially they just can't tolerate it because they think that they're supposed to tolerate it because, you know, they're not supposed to have any self-centered interest. But it doesn't work like that. After a while, you just have a mental breakdown if you do that. You know, we need certain facility, that's all. Certain facility, and we, you know, right now we need to enjoy devotional service. Later on, pure love is there, and you're willing to go to hell to serve Krishna. What's that?
Yeah.
Oh. I thought when they chant Allah Akbar, that's a reminder.
This was what I said.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but in your house you have automatic reminders, you know. Isn't that the mosque is right next door? It's nice.
We'll hear reminders everywhere.
That's nice. They're helping us become Krishna conscious in that way. It's actually nice. See, so I admire very much that determination, you know, that strictness and everything like that. I wish devotees were that strict. That every day they would offer 5 times obeisances, and, isn't it? We can admire what people do in other religions because there's a lot of good qualities that people exhibit. A lot of good qualities. You know, determination, sticking to your principles. You know, people do it a lot better. Other religions sometimes do it a lot better than we do. So, anyways, I wouldn't worry about enjoying it. I would just enjoy it. Enjoy the chanting, and then keep on doing it. You know, whatever your motivation is, as long as it keeps you going on. And, you know, you have as your goal, ultimately, that we're supposed to be a pure devotee, nishkama, and all that other nice stuff. And that'll happen. These things naturally fall away from you as you progress in devotional service. That's my experience. I mean, not that, you know, sinful desires you really got to work on, and arthas you really got to work on. That's true. But, you know, some personal desires we're executing devotional service. I wouldn't worry about it. I would say, you know, just, if it gets you chanting, chant. Like, I enjoy going to Govardhan. I'm not going to feel guilty about it. I like it. I like it better than being anywhere, even here. You know, I'm just counting the days. You know, I look at my calendar here. I said, so many days. Like people count their days till Christmas, you know. So many shopping days left to Christmas. I'm counting them. Now, right now it's the 7th. On the 19th, I'll be at Govardhan. The 18th, I'm leaving. So I'm doing this in my mind, like, several times during the day. I'm thinking, wow, only 12 more days, and I'll be at Govardhan. I'm enjoying. I'm going there to enjoy. You know, maybe I should be more surrendered. I'm not going to worry about it. Because at least it's Govardhan. I'm not going to the karaoke clubs to enjoy. you know, it's Govardhan. I mean, someone tells me, I'm enjoying kirtan. I say, great! Enjoy it more. And if, you know, if you need more instruments or different types of instruments to help you focus on kirtan, do it. I mean, sometimes people get so fanatic with this thing that you can only chant with certain instruments. Right, you heard this before? But I've had, you know, some of the times when I could focus best on the holy name, someone is playing the accordion. There's this devotee, Hare Krishna Das, anyone ever met him? From Italy?
And they don't allow you to perform at certain
times. Certain times. I mean, but when he plays the accordion and chants, I'm completely absorbed in the holy names. I mean, I can't even help myself. So, you know, I really need it. Just like, okay, so talking about ruchi. Let's talk about ruchi, for example, because that's really what we're talking about, having a taste. There's two types of ruchi. One type is you need the external environment adjusted properly to really have a taste. Another one is even if someone chants and they can't keep one note in tune, you still like it. So we have to recognize we may not be on the second platform where someone just chants, "Hey, Rich!" and we like it. I mean, very few of us are on that platform. You know, myself, I'll probably put my hands in my ears and run out. But when Hare Krishna Das comes with his accordion and chants sweetly, I'm back to Godhead already, basically. So recognize, you know, don't feel guilty. Oh, I need the sound of the accordion. Oh, I'm in Maya. It's a Maya instrument. You know, you get into all these, like, things in the mind. Just like chanting Hare Krishna, whatever instrument, play the trumpet, play the trombone, play the xylophone. Whatever you got to play to chant Hare Krishna. If it helps you chant, do it. I was with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had someone play the bass drum, not bass drum, bass guitar during the kirtan, you know. And he had everyone going like it was in the Los Angeles temple. Not the temple room. There used to be an auditorium in Los Angeles, which they turned into the temple room. And, you know, right after Prabhupada's lecture, the person was going, boom, Hare Krishna, boom, 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 and chanting. Prabhupada liked it. And as far as what instruments they play in the spiritual world, I mean, they play all sorts of instruments. Not just the Madangan cartels. There's stringed instruments they play, right? There's horns. You see in pictures, not this picture here. Oh, yeah. Is there a picture of someone playing a horn there? I can't see it clearly. But some of the Lord Chaitanya pictures, there's a horn, someone's playing a horn. It's good enough for Lord Chaitanya, it's good enough for me. Anyway, enjoy kirtan. And if you need good music to accompany it, great. Do it. Otherwise, if you feel like that, you know, I just don't need any of these instruments, it just should be like atonal, you know, atonal chanting, then what's going to happen? You're going to develop a desire to hear Bach and Beethoven and everything like that. So after the kirtan, you're going to go home and turn on your MP3 player. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. Right? Because you're going to want to hear some melodic thing. No, I like to hear melodic things. You know, someone playing the tablas. I like all sorts of things, Krishna consciousness. But if I didn't fulfill that desire with Krishna conscious music, you know, because I'd listened to a lot of music before I joined the movement, I had stacks of classical albums. You know, albums? They used to have albums? Yeah. Vinyl albums. You remember that?
Vinyl.
That was before CDs, before cassettes, and before MP3s. You know, LP albums. And I had a very good record player. And I listened to all these things. And I'd like to hear nice music. So if I can't dovetail and hear nice music that's being played for Krishna, my mind is not going to be satisfied. I mean, I have to be honest. You know, I want to hear nice things chanted for Krishna by nice devotees. So let's just be honest about our needs, because otherwise, it's not going to work. You know, we're not going to be stable or steady. So that, you know, music or food, someone may say, I can just live on a few chickpeas a day. Or I want to be a breatharian. You know what a breatharian is? They live just by breathing. Prana. You know, prana. So, but, you know, we need tasty prasadam, right? If I just said to you, you know, here's just some, just oat water every day. Oh, I remember, yeah, here's this funny story. My own experience in Krishna consciousness. I was in this place called New Vrindavan. And this is in the old days. So what they would feed the devotees every day was, for breakfast, it was just oat water. Not even oats, you know. You know, they were just, they didn't have enough money to buy oats for everybody. And the oats were not exactly the same oats you buy in the store. They were, because they wanted to save money, they bought the horse oats. You want horse oats? You know, you buy them in big bags like that. You have horses or cows or things like that. So every morning, you know, was it boil, boil, double trouble, cauldron burn? That's Shakespeare for you. Cauldron bubble. So they would give us this oat water. And the oat water. Oh, it was hot. It was warm. And so you drink that. And the temple president, he was very austere. He said, yes, this is good austerity. Gives you potency in Krishna consciousness. I was thinking, whew, it's not for me. So what I did, I had some tricks. I would go, there's something called Krishna's garbage. Have you heard of Krishna's garbage before? That means when someone is making, they've offered nice things to the deities, like mangoes and fruit and everything like that. But, you know, when you're peeling fruit and everything, you always leave something else over, like the pit of the mango. So I go into the garbage afterwards and just pick out Krishna's garbage and eat nice fruit, you know, because there's a lot left over. Because I really wasn't satisfied just eating oat water. My mind wasn't satisfied. Does that mean I was in Maya? No, it just means I was being practical. It's being practical, you know, I had to have something nice tasting. You know, now, even now that I'm eating a more austere diet, I like to have nice tasting food. And Prabhupada even said, when they were trying to give him a very austere diet of just boiled vegetables, he said, let the starvation committee go to hell. Because they were trying to feed him very simply. So, I mean, so we need those things. I know it's not pure. You should be able to live on a pat of butter. Hare Krishna. So we should be able to live on a pat of butter every day, like the Goswamis of Vrindavan. Dira, dira, janapriyo, janapriyo, nidrahara, they gave up eating, they gave up sleeping. We should all just sleep 1 hour a night, or at most, 5 hours a night. We tried that. When I joined the movement, we were all forced to sleep just 5 hours a night. And guess what? Every time someone was giving a class, everyone would be sleeping. And so people stood up in class just to avoid sleeping. And then in the middle of class, many times you hear a crash. As a person. And then... and then eventually we developed this technique of using the spray bottle, you know, for plants. Going around the room, you know, spraying everybody in the face who was falling asleep. And then we also developed a technique while we were driving and sleeping at each red light. Some of you may have experienced that. Light turns red. You're driving the car. And then, oh, okay. And you drive to the next light and you go to sleep. You've experienced it? Some of you experienced that? Yeah. You did that too. So, you know, like if you need to sleep more. Don't be guilty about it. We have all these guilt feelings, you know. that. I'm guilty. I'm sleeping too much. I'm in ignorance. You know, Prabhupada said, if you sleep more than 6 hours a night, you're in ignorance. Right? But that's a general thing, you know, and also people in India need to sleep less than people from the West. That's one thing I've seen. So whatever you need to sleep. Prabhupada also said, if you drive in a car, sleep 8 hours. And we lost many devotees who were sleeping too little and they crashed their cars and they died. So you really have to be careful. You know, just do what you need to do, but chant Hare Krishna. You know, if you like the chant, great. And, you know, if it helps you to play a trumpet while you're chanting Hare Krishna, play the trumpet. I don't care. You know, stand on your head. Do whatever you have to do. You know, just chant Hare Krishna. Okay. It's getting late. I think we're going to have to end. I think we had nice questions, nice discussions about internal devotional service. And that's the real point. To develop ourselves internally. Otherwise, everything else is a failure. Shrama Avi Kevalam. It doesn't really make sense. You know, to become a leader, to have a big temple, all these things are not so important. Okay, so we'll see a lot of you at the camp. And we're going to have a good time at Krishna Camp. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sarivo Yatra Ki Jai. Iskan Ki Jai. Prasadam Ki Jai. Thank you.